TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 611, and I am Livia, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for 6 Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Tom. I chair visual and media arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Time podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Hi, this is Yusun, and I'm a costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, thanks, guys. Welcome back. Let's start off with the shows first.
Oh, I got a lot of news.
Oh, sorry. My bad. Tom, what is our news?
ABC has announced that Will Trent Season 3 is adding Gina Rodriguez as ADA Marion Alba. So hopefully she'll be a potential love interest for Will so he can stop this whatever thing he's got with Angie, because I'm over that. They've also ordered the Tim Allen, Kat Dennings multicam comedy Shifting Gears to series without writers Mike Scully and Julie Thacker. Amazon canceled My Lady Jane after one season. Apple TV Plus has picked up Criminal Record for season 2 and Dark Matter for season 2, which I'm like not excited about.
Really? That had a natural ending.
Yeah, they kind of left the trap door for another season, but
yeah, I would have been happy to leave it as is.
I would have been
frankly.
Very happy. They're also circling an order for a Ted Lasso season 4, which I please turn that into a spinoff, not Ted Lasso.
Because he's not in it.
That series, well, they're trying to negotiate with Sudeikis, but they've got like 3 of the principals signed and they're trying to get more. They've got Waddingham, Swift, and I think Brent.
The whole reason we didn't get a Ted Lasso is because the Apple and him had a big falling out.
I don't know. CBS, Catherine Renee Cain, who plays Special Agent Tiffany Wallace on FBI, will be leaving that show sometime during season 7. Jared Padalecki is joining Fire Country for at least a 3-episode arc that may serve as a setup for a spinoff, which that will be the second spinoff of Fire Country if that happens. Disney Plus, big news, canceled The Acolyte after one season. Timothy Simons from Veep will recur in Percy Jackson season 2 as Tantalus. James Spader will reprise his role as Ultron's voice in the upcoming Vision series.
Okay, I have one comment about that, because everybody's been speculating on how they were going to resurrect him after he got basically his chest exploded and killed. And I was like, have you guys never heard of flashbacks? Because he's like, he created Vision, so it seems natural if we're going to delve into the psychology of Vision, then we have to look at Ultron. Like,
I'm thinking Rogue subroutine personally, but
yeah, that's what that occurred to me too, that he's a voice in his head kind of a thing.
Fighting for dominance. Ben. By the way, if they don't call that series Vision Quest, shame on them. Disney is also producing 4 new Simpsons episodes exclusively for Disney Plus, which led some pundits to wonder, does that mean it's going to eventually like stop showing new episodes on Fox? HBO announced Gilded Age season 3 has added 8 to the cast, but the top liners we care about are Leslie Uggams, Merritt Weaver, and Andrea Martin. Michael LeCole is set to star in, write, and executive produce a new drama series, First Day on Earth, co-produced with the BBC, and Emmy winner from I Must Destroy You a couple seasons back. Hulu has given an official series order for Mid-Century Modern, that Golden Girls-like sitcom with Nathan Lane, Matt Bomer, Nathan Lee Graham, and Linda Lavin. Legendary TV has hired Clea DuVall to write and direct a series adaptation of Anna Dorn's novel Perfume and Pain. Netflix picked up Supercell for season 2, The Gentleman for season 2. They greenlit a Ghostbusters animated series. Boy, talk about been there, done that. One Piece season 2 has added Charitra Chandran from Bridgerton as Miss Wednesday. Bridgerton season 4 has cast Yeren Ha as Benedict's love interest Sophie Beckett, and Maria Bello is joining the Kevin Williamson series The Waterfront. Paramount Network has confirmed that Patrick J. Adams, Alan Chapman, and Bo Garrett will join Michelle Pfeiffer in the Yellowstone spinoff The Madison, which was developed as 2024. We still don't know if that's going to be on Paramount Network or Paramount Plus. Peacock has ordered a female-led crime series, MIA, from Ozark co-creator Bill Dubuc. Brad Caleb Kane will be the showrunner of the Friday the 13th prequel series. Sky has set Yellowstone star Kelly Riley as the lead for the drama Under Salt Marsh. And this is crazy news. TNT swiped The Librarian's reboot series from the CW as a plan to revive their drama slate.
But The Librarian's okay. Not that good. I don't even know.
I know, but still. CW, it was one of the few things CW had good on their schedule, and then TNT scooped it up. And finally, USA's Rainmaker series adaptation has cast John Slattery as the title character and Milo Callahan as the series lead.
All of that is just like, wow, like I don't know half of what you said.
But, it's like blibbity blibbity blah.
Yeah. Only thing I heard was Supercell's getting a season 2, which I'm
you
very
did hear
happy
that
about.
Correctly.
All right, let's talk about the shows. First up, we're going to talk the new series Lady in the Lake. And this was a series that Malik was talking about and telling us all to give a shot to. And it was not what I was expecting. I didn't realize it was a period piece. Like, I knew it was like a murder mystery because it's obviously like someone gets killed and gets thrown to the bottom of the lake and you got to solve it. But then when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is in the 1960s? Like, I didn't realize that at all. And I love Natalie Portman. But
in the right role.
Yeah, and so I was like, okay. And I'm not loving it. It's not hitting me. It's doing stuff that I don't need in my murder mystery. So I think part of it is this is a period that I'm not particularly interested in, and they're focusing on the social status of like women's rights and Black people's rights, and with a side of murder. And I'm like, I would like my murder first and the other stuff second, please.
Hold the sexism and the period racism, please.
Exactly. Like, bring that down and let's do the murder mystery. I can't get into it. And then I'll let you guys talk, because I know some of you guys really like it. So go forth.
Do we?
Well, I probably like it better than you do. I don't think it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. My understanding, because I was reading about it afterward, I did not read the book that it was based on, but my understanding is that they did do a lot of changes, which actually probably brought forth more of the things that you don't like about it. It had more of the more social, discussion and conflict in that area than the book did. The book was mainly just, you know, about Maddie, about that one character, and everything else was secondary to that. So what I liked was actually the fact that they fleshed out the other characters, Cleo especially, and made her much more dynamic and proactive in her own fate. So I did appreciate that. I think if you don't want to see something that has to do with social injustice and racism and sexism, then definitely this is not going to be something you're going to enjoy. I like historical pieces. That particular period of time interests me. Especially I was a little kid, and I was in a sort of a hermetic seal as far as that was concerned. I didn't grow up in a particularly racist environment, but I was very much aware of the kind of civil rights movement and the riots that were going on and things like that. And so that period of time is interesting to me. So if you are interested in it, I think it's extremely well done. The music, the sets, the costumes, everything is on point. And the acting is excellent.
The acting is excellent. I feel like do one or the other. Like, if this was a social justice kind of, that's what the drama's about, then you know what you signed up for. I signed up for a murder mystery, and that's not what I got. So,
well, I think, to me at least, I think they handled both well. I think there were parts of it that kind of dragged. There were things in it that didn't necessarily need to be, but overall, I enjoyed it. And I don't know how much of the series we're going to talk about.
Just the first two.
Okay.
The second episode ends with the police officer showing up at Natalie Portman's apartment.
Right.
And them getting busy.
I'm metaphorically screaming at my screen. Please don't go here. Please don't go. Oh, come on.
And it's a little tropey.
In the 60s, this is not going to end well. And she's still married. Are you kidding me? No, this is not. This is just not going to end well.
I liked it. I'm with Allison. I mean, I could probably just stamp ditto on this review and we could move on. It's not like the best thing I've ever seen, and it's not like the newest or, you know, most innovative or like, oh my God, I've never seen this before. But I like the world it built in terms of like the music and the cinematography and the costume design.
I will say the music in the second episode where they had that kind of, the people were singing on stage and they had all these other things that were flowing in. That was really well edited and really well done.
I was going to say that was very well edited.
The whole thing is actually I would say one of the outstanding things about the series overall is the editing and the music are both just amazing.
So that's, you know, so that's what I mean by like it's a good watch. Like I like to watch it. It's rich in its color and, you know, the editing and the costume design, and then the acting is very good. So, you know, as far as, you know, I don't mind having the social justice involved with my murder mystery because I'm not really into, you know, like, just murders can be so depressing and just humanity and this and that. So if you're going to give me, you know, flashing, you know, baubles of other things to like kind of pay attention to and care about, that scene, there was that montage where she was, well, it wasn't really a montage, but there was that scenes where she was trying to sell her car and she kept getting, you know, turned down because, you know, she needed her husband's. I mean, that was real. I know it was real.
I know, and I'd forgotten about that.
You know what I mean? I'd forgotten about that. And that to me was actually very important for me to see, to kind of emphasize the kind of oppression that she, and the where she, her mindset is, you know, and how desperate she is and what her situation is like and how not hopeless, but how little control she has in her situation. So I like that for me.
I get what you're saying. One thing it made me also realize how much I really don't like her son. Her son is like just...
Her husband and her son are just horrible.
The husband, I understand because he's used to oppressing his wife. So this is not... He's weirded out.
That son is...
Yeah, right. He's weirded out that she's acting all strange and independent. He's like, what did I do? Like, he's freaked out by that and doesn't understand it. And he's kind of angry. And I kind of get where he's coming from, because as far as he understood, they were happy. And then all of a sudden she left him. So he's confused. So I get his point of view.
Now, I will.
The son bothers me so much, because he's just like looking at his mom like a piece of property, and why are you not acting like a piece of property? And I was just like,
yeah, but he was awful before she leaves too.
Yeah, he was awful before she left.
I mean, he was.
Now I will say that, I mean, they, and I'm not going to give a spoiler here, they do give an explanation for why he is off the charts awful. But the problem, and this goes back to the pacing issue that I was talking about before, is that, yes, they eventually explain this and you go, oh, but it's so far down the line that they impart this information to you that you go way too long thinking this kid is just the worst. And it doesn't really make him better. It just gives an explanation for, okay, I understand this now. So I think that's one of the issues that they have, is when they do start giving you information, it's not necessarily when you needed it. Okay. And that was one of the things where his character in particular was concerned.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm watching two episodes. So, and yes, the kid's annoying, but like teenage kids are oftentimes annoying and awful people and awful
to their parents. But they're not that sassy to their mothers.
Not to your mom. Yeah.
No,
yeah, that was just inexcusable to me.
No, I mean, so I'm fine with it in the sense that, like, I'm willing to just kind of be like, ugh, he's an awful teenage kid. And if they explain to me why later, that's fine too. It just, it didn't take me out of it, or I don't care about it enough. To me, it's compelling. I really like the story. The duality, the kind of, you know, the where she was living and the life she was living, and now the life that she's living, and even the sort of like sapphic kind of energy that was with her and her friend's daughter, like that was kind of weird, but in a good way.
What was so crazy is the cop was like, and obviously there were lesbians hanging out in the woods, and I was like,
I thought that was strange that he automatically jumps to that conclusion.
I know, yeah. I was like, why they happen to be on searching and find the body, so you assume they're lesbians? Like, what?
And like
it was just such a bizarre jump. And then you felt like he was going to sexually assault her at any moment too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is going on? Like, that's my issue. Also my issue with this is, like, not only you got the racism and all this other stuff, you got like weird, creepy cops that are coming on. Like, just, it was just like a lot.
Well, but it is part of it. I mean, in that period of time, not only did you have institutionalized racism, you had institutionalized sexism as well. Yeah. And I mean, what they go through before, you know, with where women having so little legal agency, it also just, it had to do with how the social aspect of it,
yeah,
of just being treated like a thing.
I understand all of the things you're saying. I'm just not interested. That's what I'm saying.
Which is fair. I get that totally.
Yeah, because I've seen it a lot. I've lived it, and it's not something, I guess, for me. If you're, and I, we need to move on. We really do need to move on. But I guess all I was just gonna say is, for me, this was not what I was looking for in this show, and it gave me way too much of it, and it made me angry, and it made me just like, just mad. And I wanted to enjoy a nice murder mystery and just not be angry at my screen. All right, let's move on. The next up, we're going to talk Bad Monkey. And we're going to talk the first three episodes because of, I want to get to the big reveal that they
have. The twist.
In episode.
Oh, you said we were only going to do the first two, so I stopped. I could have watched the third episode.
Sorry.
I like, legitimately stopped, even though I was interested in the show.
Hit mute when we get to episode three. Basically, Bad Monkey stars Vince Vaughn, who I will tell you off the bat, I am not a fan of Vince Vaughn. And he was the main thing of why I didn't want to hit play on this. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to like this. But if you can make it through the pilot, I will say this. I was halfway through the pilot and I was ready to just turn it off. And I literally stopped and read reviews. And I was like, does this show get better than this really slow, just annoying pilot? And all the reviews were giving it like B pluses and saying how great it was. And they were like, we finished the series. It's amazing. I was like, fine, I'll get through this pilot. And by the time I finished the pilot, I was like, all right, okay, I'm on board. Like, they got me. It just took, I watched 30 minutes and I hated it. And then it took until the end of the pilot to where I was like, okay, this is interesting. And it's just the first 30 minutes is all Vince Vaughn's story. And then after that, we switch to what's going on the island, and we get introduced to a whole new set of characters and what they're going through. And I was like, oh, this is totally different and totally interesting. And then in episode two, they really interweave these two stories together in a super interesting way, to where I was like, okay, this is totally working for me. I get it. And Vince Vaughn was not as annoying as I thought he was going to be from the first 30 minutes. He was actually, and I really like the medical examiner. What's that woman's name?
The actress's name? She looks so familiar. But
I've seen her in something else. I know.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, so
I love the
really
fact
liked
that
her.
He's totally flirting with her, and she's totally pushing back, but she's totally kind of interested because she keeps checking up on him.
I like that, because she was like, I have a boyfriend. He was like, can I take it? She's like, no, he's SWAT. And he's like, okay, fine. And then you find out later she lied. All of that was super cute. Like, I bought into that. I still thought, but then at the same time, he's sleeping with a married woman who has like a secret life. Like,
who's crazy?
Like, oh, yeah. Oh my God. Like, and then he like shoves her husband off the dock in his car. Like, all the craziness of why he's out of a job. Like, it was
it's
just
set in Florida, you know.
Again, Tom?
It's set in Florida.
Oh, Florida man does.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I mean, it was insane, but it was insane in a way that ended up being entertaining. So I'm going to let somebody else talk.
Natalie Martinez plays the medical examiner that he has basically ensnared in his unofficial investigation. But no, it's got a great ensemble cast. What can you say? I mean, the inciting incident of the mystery is they find a fisherman. There's a fishing trip, and then they pull up this severed arm. And so it's like, oh, murder. And so.
Or boating accident.
Or boating accident.
Right.
So it looks like the trophy wife of a rich dude has offed him for the insurance money, and his daughter doesn't like the stepmom. So. There's stuff going on
but
that
you
I won't
understand
until we
get, yeah, the stepmom is terrible.
To mute when we get farther enough. I like the weird energy, and also where the monkey comes in, where this this kid whose sister sells the family property out from under him, and he goes to see basically like I guess it's supposed to be some kind of voodoo,
right?
Yeah,
by
she's
the
like
way,
a voodoo
that's
queen.
The same woman who played one of the witches on
Acolyte, Jodie
yep.
Turner Smith.
Yep.
Jodie Turner Smith,
just
in a much better written role. Yeah, I said it. And L. Scott Caldwell from Lost as also involved. But no, it's just this interesting. It's got this quirky vibe, kind of like a Northern Exposure-y thing set in the Keys and South Florida. I'm in. I mean, it's just quirky and interesting and weird characters, and it's fun.
I didn't have a problem with the pilot. I also am not a fan of Vince Vaughn, but when I saw it and I was watching it, I thought, oh, okay, well, it's Vince Vaughn doing Vince Vaughn, you know what I mean? His standard character and, you know, kind of, you know, sarcastic, sardonic, you know, kind of laissez-faire kind of. You know, he acts the way he like he's just half interested in anything that's going on in his life. And so I thought, well, this is what I'm getting. I know what I'm getting. Let me see what they're going to give me. And I like the world they created. I like all the characters. I like the Keys. I like the Keys really shows its personality, you know, the type of the environment really is a character in the show. Which sometimes, a lot of times, it's not. You know, you get New York, you get Los Angeles, you get these places where, you know, we're very familiar with, and you know, and they talk about how the city is a character in the show. Well, to me, the Keys is a character in the show, and I really like it. It's new for me. I'm not familiar with the Keys. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but so for me, I really like that it's created this extra character, which is interesting for me to watch. I like his partner. I like the relationship that he has with his or former, you know, cop partner. I like the relationship he has with the doctor, the morgue, you know,
medical examiner.
You know, so I do think they have some chemistry. It isn't super silly. Which, you know, and it isn't super gritty. It's kind of found its little niche. It's like it's a little area where it's just quirky enough and just serious enough where there is actually like I do care about the mystery, you know, and I do care about what's going on because that the guy got shot, that boy, you know, got shot and, you know, he got murdered and the girlfriend's running around and, you know, so there's a lot going on and it isn't completely silly. So I care about the mystery of it all, but then it's quirky with good acting and funny, interesting kind of characters, a lot of characters, which in this case I'm enjoying because it kind of adds to the kind of kookiness of everything. So I'm liking the show. It's hard to kind of label as a show. It's also long. It's over an hour long, or it's a full hour long. So it's not like a dramedy, like short.
Yeah, I felt like it should have been a 30-minute show.
Yeah, it feels like it's a 30-minute
yeah,
show.
It felt like a 30-minute show. And so after 30 minutes, I'm like looking at the clock like, oh, we've got more? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a little hard to place.
Well, I think the pacing is a little better in the second and third episodes.
Well,
than
that's
they
what
are
I was gonna
first.
Say. Yusen, you should mute because I was gonna have
mute now, Yusen.
I'm gonna have Allison talk about episode three. So
okay.
Allison, let's talk about episode three and talk about the big reveal. Go ahead.
Okay.
The mystery continues. Oh, Zach Braff shows up.
Oh, right. Nice,
as a
nice cameo.
Drugged up doctor who is helping with this insurance scam. So of
well,
course he turns
he
up dead by the end
was,
of the episode.
He thought he was involved in one kind of crime and found out he was involved in a whole other
different kind of crime.
Yeah.
And
so,
still
yeah.
gets dead.
I want Allison to talk real quick. Go ahead.
No, I was saying before that the pacing I think improves definitely by the second and third episode because I was thinking it was a little slow to start with. And then of course we get to that twist. Which I know, Olivia, you said you picked out because of the way it was being shot. I didn't notice that. So it came as a total surprise to me. And I was like, and then I was like, okay, that makes total sense. But it was crazy.
If you go back and watch episode two, every time they show that actor, they're very careful to only shoot him from like just one part of his body, and that other part of his body is off camera, and it's not a natural framing of how you would frame an actor.
Yeah, and I
that's
just didn't
I
pick
was
up
like,
on
that.
You used your editorial,
but you know that's
school.
That's just part of the twist, though, because the other twist, not only is it his arm, but he's the father. That you
right.
know, and the two of them, he and the daughter, embracing at the end was like I was just, you know, that was great. It was just it was perfectly timed, perfectly handled, you know, and then fade to black. It was just, you know, chef's kiss.
That was a chef's kiss kind of moment. I agree.
Yeah.
That's like if you weren't hooked before. By the time you get to episode three at the end, you'll definitely be hooked. You'll be like, what the heck? Because even though I had figured out it was him, I couldn't figure out why he would chop off his own arm. Like, I didn't understand. And I still don't quite understand.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to find out.
Yeah. So that's why you're like, oh my God, I got to see the next episode to find out what is going on.
Yeah, but I love overall, I think what kept me watching it, because like I said, the first episode wasn't paced all that great. It's just the quirkiness of it and the humor. I found myself really liking the characters from the get-go, even Vince Vaughn, which surprised me. And it was just funny and fun and weird. And it also made, well, I don't think you have to try very hard to make the Keys look gorgeous, but it looked so beautiful, especially when they have him on the bicycle and he's just, you know, gliding through town. And it's like, I'd like to move there if it wasn't in Florida, you know, but
if it wasn't in Florida,
if only they could move the Keys over to the other coast, it would be perfect.
Different set of keys.
It's a really fun series. I think, you know, even twist aside, there it's just a fun, funny, quirky series with fun, quirky characters. So,
from
I'm
Bill
enjoying
Lawrence,
it.
Wrap up, we gotta wrap this up.
And Ted Lasso.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it reminds me of an old school Blue Skies USA Network show before they had their
yeah,
dark twist.
I could see
this
that.
Swear
like
words.
That Marshall show, it reminds me a little bit of that Marshall show.
With Mary, Mary McCormack?
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of that. But anyway, we got to wrap that up. All right, we're going to go on to the next show.
I just have to say that I can't wait to see episode three because watching you guys in silence but laughing and enjoying yourselves talking about the episode, I'm like, oh my God, what happens in episode three?
Well, we're about to move on to the next show. So now you have a couple episodes to look forward to. So I can't wait to hear what you think of it later. All right. So next up, we're going to talk Umbrella Academy episodes three and four. And in episode three, what, Allison, you told me the summary and I forgot already. What
And so did I, actually, and I was the one who told it to you.
the
Hang on. Episode three is where the group splits up to find Jennifer. Later on, they pay Reginald a visit, confronting memories that hold critical clues to their
Oh, this is
mission.
the episode where they actually go into the they meet Red, they meet their dad. Not, but not their dad.
And
He's from a different timeline, so he doesn't even know them. And then they meet his wife, who all of the sacrifices that everybody made were all to bring her back to life. And then she is basically scolding Reginald about how he's treating the kids. And then they were like, "We have a suppressed memory," because they were like, "How does Ben die in our timeline?" And nobody could remember. They could just have this thing that they kept reciting. And so they use this device and go. We actually get a flashback to see what happened to the original timeline, Ben, which was really interesting. I thought that was a really good use of a way to get the flashback. The only thing I call shenanigans on is Victor didn't have any suppressed memories, so it didn't make sense that Victor would go into the device. So I didn't understand what that was about, other than Victor. Like, so did Victor just basically see everybody else's memory? Because Victor had no memories of that. So that was just
Yeah, no, Victor. I think the machine was feeding off not just their memories, but I mean collectively, it was like piecing together
right,
something
but I'm just
that the
saying Victor,
audience could see. So
right.
it didn't matter that Victor personally did not have a memory of that. The whole idea was that he wanted to know what everyone else was having trouble remembering, and so
Right.
went in there to take a
I don't
look.
know. It was just weird, the Victor edition. But anyway, I did really, really like the flashback. I thought that was pretty cool. And then when we get the memories back, of course, everyone is very mad at their dad. And he's like, "Look, I had nothing to do with it."
Not
But
that
then
version.
his first instinct when he finds out about the dual particles, because this is when we find out that the marigold that gives them their powers has an opposing particle, which is basically matter and antimatter, and you combine them, it blows everything up. It's pretty much what they're saying. And Jennifer was born with the opposite particle, and so that's why none of the people from the academy can ever interact with her. And oops, Ben is hanging out with her now, like, oh no, you know. And what was
What could go
hilarious
wrong?
What's hilarious to me is, oh God, which one is he? He's the big, tall, monkey guy. Which one is he? What's his name?
Oh, that's oh my God. I'm
See,
blanking.
Tom is supposed to be listening because he's the one who knows everyone's names.
Luther,
Thank
Luther.
you. Luther was like, oh, should I mention the fact that the last time I saw Ben, he had this scarring on his arm and it was glowing and it was all weird, but you know, I didn't think anything of it. And I was like, oh my God, Luther. So they're like, yeah, that's kind of important. So all of that, but then my main issue is that Reginald, the second he hears about it, he goes and grabs a shotgun because he's gonna go kill Ben. Like, no discussion. Let's go do that. And Victor has made it his mission to slow this all down and like, no, I'm not gonna let you kill my brother. And I thought that was good. I like that conflict. I like where that's going. And then you have Five and, oh God, what's her name?
Lila?
Thank you. You have Five and Lila deciding that they're going to solve this and leave the children behind, as they call everybody else in the family. And they're going to be the ones to solve this whole mystery and figure out what's going on with the trains and all of that. And of course, it goes horribly wrong at the end of episode four, where they found out they're on the express train. Oops.
They
So.
see their stop go by. That's, it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, so what did you think of these two episodes, real quick before we move on?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I with Umbrella Academy, you've got to be in for the weird, and
Yeah.
they definitely brought the weird with these episodes like they did before. I like the fact that by this point in the season, we have everybody, you know, together and they're on the same page. You know, even if they do separate them physically, they're all working toward the same goal, right. And they're all, you know,
well,
all
except
siblings.
For the drug addict guy, Klaus.
Oh, Klaus.
Klaus is the only one that, as soon as he got his powers, he peaced out, and because he's like, I have to go get drugs. And
yeah, well, because his powers, I mean, they just haunt, they literally haunt him.
Yes.
He can't deal with that. That's the, I think the reason he got into drugs in the first place is right. to try to suppress this. And
yeah,
I mean, he was the one who was most at peace without his powers.
True, but the thing that's weird is towards the end of the last season, he got to where he could control his powers well enough that he didn't have to be on drugs all the time. So it's just a little strange that they just have him just roll back. But then you have him captured by this, his random drug dealer. Like he shows him, oh, you can kill me as many times as you want, but I'm going to come back. And I was like, how did you think that was going to work out well for you, Klaus? Like, I don't understand what he thought he was going to get out of that, because it went bad. It went bad,
yes,
very quickly.
Very badly.
So he basically is like an indentured servitude to this guy, and he has to perform seances or something, talking to ghosts for people. And then he's like, I'm taking this money for my cut and this money for somebody else's cut. And then by the time he was done, he's like, you can have $20 or you can have some more drugs. What is your choice? And of course, Klaus picks.
He goes for the drugs.
Of course he does. And so that lets you know he's never getting out of there. But I think at the end of this, I don't remember if that, because by the end of this episode, they have the big shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And the episode basically ends, I believe, hopefully not giving a spoiler, is he gets buried.
He gets buried.
In the grave site. And you're just like, oh, come on, Klaus. Like, course. So as you say, they're all on the same page, except Klaus is all I wanted to say. But let's wrap this up. Overall, these episodes I thought were pretty good.
Yeah. No, I think last season, you know, they kind of lost me a little bit, but with this season, I think they're back on track and I really enjoyed it.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk Star Trek Prodigy. And I know we haven't talked about it at all since it dropped. So we're trying to, there's 20 episodes. And so we're trying to get through the season in blocks. So we're going to do episodes 1 through 5. So that way we should have 4 blocks to get to the finale. So episodes 1 through 5, there's a two-parter called Into the Breach, where it basically sets up the conflict for the season, which is that all our characters from last season are now, they're not even Starfleet cadets. They're like in training to possibly become Starfleet cadets.
It's kind of like ROTC for Starfleet Academy.
There you go. So they're not even.
Or JROTC.
Yeah. We can't hear you, Yusen. Yusen, you're muted. What did you say?
I said, can I jump in and watch it starting this season without having watched the previous seasons?
Yes.
You'll be, well, a lot of it refers
a lot of it
back
to
stuff that
happened
in the season
with
one.
The time travel. I disagree.
And season one is excellent. I would really, really recommend going through it. Now, I mean, I had trouble at the very beginning, particularly because there's one character who I found extremely irritating, and that changes over time. But I think it really is overall a terrific series. So you'd be cheating yourself, I think, by not seeing season one.
And season two is based on time travel to not undo stuff from season one so that the timeline goes correctly. So if you don't know what happens in season one, I think it's confusing.
You'd be kind of lost. It directly relates to
Netflix
the events.
Does Netflix not do a previously on for it?
No, I don't believe so.
And how are you going to do previously on the last 20 episodes? Like, and they're
they
half hour, so they're quick.
They've done it before for Star Trek shows.
But my point is, I like the first five. The setup is basically like, okay, we're cadets. were on this ship, and they're only on the ship because Janeway likes them. And so they're supposed to be training to learn how to become Starfleet cadets. And immediately they get in trouble because they're like, learning to be cadets is boring. We had our own ship and we're running missions last season. And now we have to like be little cadets and do nothing. So the main character starts trying to snoop around and ends up finding out information he's not supposed to know. So then they get a full briefing. And then what's the first thing they do? Screw everything up. Congratulations. And so they end up going back in time. What is it? 50 years? And totally... 50,
they go forward in time, actually, like 56 years, I think.
Yeah, but because when they come back in the wormhole, then that wormhole goes back in time. But anyway, the whole point is they personally accidentally screw up the timeline so that the ship that they get in the pilot of season one, the ship that they find, they've now screwed up the timeline, so they'll never find that ship, which means they'll never leave that planet, which has now caused the paradox. So how, what? So I love, and then I love the incorporation of Chakotay in this season and how Janeway is so motivated to find him, and they weaved in my romance. Thank you very much. Cause I shipped the crap out of them. And I didn't think the show did a really good job of like making that ship work, but the cartoon is doing a much better job. And I'm like, oh my God,
they do.
They're doing a
the entire the crux of what gets everything started and the reason that they're planning on going back, or I should say forward in time, is to rescue Chakotay because right. He's actually trapped in this wormhole. He went in to investigate and then got shot like 56 years in the future and then got captured by the remnants of the population of that planet that destroyed themselves in a civil war when the Federation tried to befriend them.
First contact, right.
Because they couldn't tolerate the
stuff, by the way, Yusin, so you need that stuff.
Yeah, that's all the things, you know, and also, you know, one of the key people of our group, Gwen, is possibly not even going to be born as a result of the ship just, you know, disappearing. So, there's, you know, like really high stakes and time travel and all of that.
Oh, my favorite thing that happens in episode 3 is temporal mechanics. They keep trying to explain to Dahl what temporal mechanics are. And they're like, didn't you read the manual? And he's like, no, I got bored. And so then they finally make him sit down and watch the video to explain temporal mechanics to him. And then he watches like the first two chapters and he skips to the end. I was like, dude, they made you a video to make this super easy so you could understand it. And he's like, yeah, I got bored. And it's.
But so I love the video too. It's like, so you want to build a time machine? it was great. It was like, they combined sort of like a 1950s, how to kind of movie with Star Trek stuff, and it was really, really funny.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
No, this is a great season. I'm so far into it that this feels like ancient history, but no, it's really a love letter, especially to Voyager, but also to, you know, hardcore Star Trek fans.
It's making me want to go back and watch Voyager. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I liked Voyager. I really enjoyed the series more than
I
most
did
people.
Not. I
didn't either.
I did not.
I liked the potential of Voyager that never was.
Right.
So yeah.
But they do have fun with it. They bring the Doctor back in, who's great.
He's going to become a lead by the end of this season.
Yeah, and the thing is, they give little bits to other things too. There's even a Lower Decks joke that they have in I think it's episode 4. Where the Doctor is talking about, I have never seen such a dysfunctional crew until I was on the Cerritos. You know? Okay.
Yeah.
There's little tidbits like that.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I think season one, the first few episodes suffered because they were like, oh, we're on Nickelodeon, so we should make the show for children. And then they were like, oh, never mind. Let's just make the show we want to make. And then once they made that pivot, this show became amazing. It's been really, really good. And episode 5 ends with, I'm trying to remember. Wait, I just rewatched this. Didn't you just rewatch this, Allison?
Yeah, I did. It's they just got out of the whale tank.
Oh, right, because
they're trying to interpret.
So they're getting a message. There's someone in the wormhole that's sending messages to them and trying to tell them, don't go now, do this, do this. And then it starts talking to Murph, which is the little bitty...
the amorphous guy. Creature.
Yeah.
Little blobby creature, yeah.
Yeah, and Murph, and he doesn't speak English. So he's trying to, like, tell them what the message is, and they can't figure out how to communicate. And what's really cool is them realizing that the reason he can't communicate with them is because he speaks in a language that you can only understand when he's in water. I was like, oh, this is Star Trek 4.
That was great, like, by the way. That was
talking to the whales. I was like, ah, okay, I see what you guys are doing.
And I love the transformation they did with Murph, too, where he's in water, like, oh. And suddenly he becomes this aquatic creature. And it's like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, I mean, it means that he's been existing in air this whole time when he should have been in water, you know? And you're like, oh, that makes a lot more sense now. And once they got him in water, all of a sudden they could understand him. And it was really cool.
Well, the whale could anyway.
Well, the whale could understand him. And then the whale could translate into English because, of course, they'd already made like a whale to English translator.
Right.
As you do. But yeah, it was really cool to figure out what the message was, which I think is like, you all have to stay together or something like that.
Well, it was like, it was I think a series of coordinates that they sent.
That's what it is. It's,
and find me.
Right. There you go. Thank you. I'm remembering a different message. Sorry.
Right. The earlier one.
Yeah. So it's really cool. How they've set up the conflict, and you can now tell where this season is going. And you're like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be a really good ride. So, all right, let's wrap that up. Thumbs up. Next up, we're going to talk Evil for the last time.
Oh God. So sad.
It's the last.
So unfair.
Last two episodes, this show.
Well, 12, 13 and 14.
Okay, sure. I don't remember. You'll have to remind me of...
12 is the court case.
I didn't like that one.
Well, because it ends really badly.
Well, no. Anytime you're doing a court case on a show that's not a court show, it's
from the creators of The Good Wife and The Good Fight. I'm surprised they stayed out of court as long as they have.
I know. I'm just not... I don't care. I don't watch court dramas for a reason. So I was not as intrigued. And also... that demon, when he transforms, looks goofy. It's supposed to look kind of scary. It looks goofy. So
the
Mr. Stick.
Taylor Vince?
What'd you say, Tom?
I'm trying to think of the actor's name. It's a prominent actor. No, I'm
yeah,
getting
I
my
recognize the name. Actor, and they're making him look.
Yeah, he's been on like American Horror Story a lot of it. He usually plays every time they need somebody who's really, really big and really scary.
And he's done Coen Brothers movies.
Yes. And yes.
I'm sure. It's just I didn't care about the court case because the whole thing. Because I mean, we all knew Leland wasn't gonna. His storyline was not gonna end with him going to jail. That was not how Leland was gonna end.
Well, he did go to jail for a little while.
He
I know,
is
but you knew
going
that
to meet an interesting fate ultimately.
That's true.
Yeah, he would have been better served if he had just gone to jail.
Yeah, John Carroll Lynch is the actor's name. No,
that's
basically,
it. Yes.
They only, I guess there's a, the court, Leland's trial lasts a total of 2 episodes, has typical twists and turns, and then to trim it up, it's not going well for Leland, seemingly, until the judge calls the star witness, the birth mother of the Antichrist, into chambers and asks her, it seems like you're being intimidated, are you? And she says, yes. And it's like, well, do you still plan to testify? And she says, yes. And he beheads her because he, too, is part of the evil cabal.
I have to say, that surprised me. Like, yeah. I did not see that coming. I was like, because the judge was all, you know, seemed really sympathetic to her, was trying to, like, make sure she's not getting bullied. And you're just like, oh, that's so good. And he's being a good judge. And he walks behind her and he's still talking. And you don't really even see him grab the sword until he's like swinging it. And I was like, oh, holy crap. And then he like tosses her body out the window. And I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, well, how is he going to explain that he called her in the chambers and we like never see her again? Like, that was just like, what? And then they just kind of blew that off. Like, oh, she didn't come back from her lunch. That's weird. Oh my God. That was.
Yeah. The thing is too, they cast the judge, Richard Kind, play that. And he's normally known for playing like, you know, comedy roles. And nice guys and things like that, you know. And so he's like the last person I would have expected to turn around and be, you know, in with the cabal. So yeah, it was that was like, I was like,
and they gave us no indication that he was on Leland's side at all.
None. He seemed like a perfect judge, you know. I mean, he was ruling against Leland most of the time. Yeah. So you just you're lulled into this sense of
complacency.
You know, complete complacency.
That was pretty good. And then as far as our main crew for these last few episodes, they've shown the fact that by them shutting down
the assessor team, the
assessor program, what that means for them, how it's going to change their lives, and oh God, why am I blanking on people's names?
David, Ben.
Okay, so, Kristen.
Kristen. So Ben, first I want to talk about Ben. Ben gets this job that pays ridiculous
loads of money.
$600,000 a year.
Yeah,
some ungodly amount of money.
Resistant to taking it because he realizes that he's kind of resistant to success, you know, and so he's trying to like evaluate that about himself. And then Kristen thinks that she has this money boon coming in for her for $800,000, only to find out that her husband took the money right out from under her. And she's
he settled for 10% of the money.
Yes, I know. So he took it out from under her. She thought that money was coming to her directly, and he settled without telling her he was doing it. And then he took off with the money and like literally disappeared. Even though he took 10%, she in theory is still, you know, should get some of that money. But she was just like, you know what? It's not even enough to fight for, whatever. And the fact that he did that in such a sneaky way, like that's what I call the ultimate character assassination, which I really wish they hadn't done. Because if you were going to do this with her husband, they should have done this 2 seasons ago.
Yeah. You know? I mean, they built him up to be a nice guy. And then all of a sudden he just wasn't.
Well, the problem was he was being freaking brainwashed by Leland.
I get that. But it just didn't feel... I didn't like how his character ended. I just really
didn't. I think they did him dirty. I mean, part of the problem was they couldn't get the actor as much as in past seasons because of Colin from Accounts, and he's from Down Under. But I don't know. It bothered me a little bit, but not that much. David, of course, is being reassigned to another. Oh no, he's being reassigned to the Vatican.
Right. And they're like, when are you leaving for Rome? And he's like, I don't know. Well, for 2 episodes, he didn't know where he was going to be reassigned. And then he finds out he's going to get reassigned to Rome. And everybody's like, oh my God. And I like Kristen is trying to play it cool. Like she doesn't mind that he's leaving, but she totally loses it and has to like storm off.
Let's talk about the doppelgangers.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Tom, you hit it.
That was wild. Basically, the penultimate episode is Nate Cordry plays a guy who's evidently being haunted by his doppelganger who committed suicide. And so like at 2 a.m., he gets possessed by this doppelganger. And it turns out that Sister Andrea has a connection because the doppelganger's father was her lost love. Mm-hmm. And so basically the father was haunting Nate Cordry, the prime version of Nate Cordry, who's not crazy and didn't commit suicide. So that was just, it was creepy, a little Shining-esque, and you know.
Also, we get to see the doppelganger version of all of our cast.
Of everybody.
Yeah, because they find an app that basically it's Find Your Doppelganger, and they get a chance to see, you know, what, like, it's sort of like, you know,
what if,
you know, what if my life took this turn instead of that?
Ben's doppelganger was actually the actor with his real family.
Yes.
I thought it was the actor, but I didn't realize that was his real family.
When I was watching that scene, I was thinking, wow, he's got really good rapport with that kid. Now I know why.
Yeah, it was all of it was good. I'm not sure how I felt about David's doppelganger, other than apparently Kristen felt like he was available to
fantasize about.
Yeah, fantasize. I was like, oh my goodness.
I think it's interesting that both David and Kristen have fantasy versions of each other that they do naughty things with.
Yes. But the only thing, because I did strangely kind of ship them this whole time, I'm not sure, like, when it finally ended, I did like that they were together, but it felt even worse because I was like, well, now he's a high ranking priest in Rome. There's no way anything is going to happen between them now. You know what I mean? So it was like a really, like, it wasn't for me. I was hoping that, because they gave you hints that he might just quit. He might just be like, done.
He's said, you know, a promise is a promise. This is a vow he intends to keep.
In their exit interview said, this ain't the Thornbirds.
Yeah. I think as far as keeping the integrity of his character is, you know, he's got to keep that vow. So I think that's legitimate, as frustrating as that is. I think it's more true to his character.
Yeah, I guess my thing is, if you're not going there, and they teased it for 4 seasons, and if you're not going there, let's just let it go. And instead, they just keep poking.
Well, yeah, of course they do. it keeps everyone on the edge. But I think ultimately their relationship is just friendship. You know, yes. For whatever they or the audience may fantasize about them, their real relationship is as friends.
The final confrontation with the 60 was it was kind of interesting that Sister Andrea warns the, you know, the new high ranking kind of jerky priest that you're doing this, you're walking into a trap. It's like, oh, no. And of course,
nice nun, let me pat you on your head and go away.
I love when she contacts David, though, and says, well, you need to talk to them because you're tall. People listen to tall people even when they're stupid.
But he gets there just in time to save the annoying whatever the title was. I think he's head of Vatican security,
isn't he?
Yeah.
I thought the final confrontation with Leland trying to, the fact that the 60 were going to meet online.
That was hilarious. They were like, why would
Norm,
they
you're people? Muted. You're muted, Norm.
You're still muted, Norm.
Well, that was great because she was like, why would they meet in person? And I was like, oh, that's a very good point. Like, it's a very good point.
But Leland trying to, you know, sneak in the house to wreak havoc with Kristen and Timothy, and then of course her turning the tables and having to be restrained by Ben and David, of course.
Yeah, that was, yeah. I don't know, man. I'd have let her do it. But having him just stuffed in that box was great. They just like,
and a callback to the season 2 episode S is for Silence.
Yeah. That was nice. And he's, nobody likes him enough to go rescue him anyway. So
the thing that I thought was interesting is he thought he was all high and powerful and so valuable. No, he's not. They didn't give a rip about him.
But let's wrap this up. I think we're all saying this is definitely a show worth watching.
It did
really well.
And still, I don't recommend you watch it at night.
Some episodes definitely not. Yeah,
there's enough creepy stuff, especially in the finale with those VR goggles and people.
That was crazy.
Right. No, it's a great series, and I'm hoping, because they did leave the door a little bit ajar at the end, especially with you know, little baby Timothy, who may not be as okay as we thought he was going to be, that we eventually get, like, I don't know, a mini series or series of movies. However they want to bring this back, I will so be there, definitely.
Yeah, considering that Paramount's got this succession of suitors, whoever ends up buying Paramount, maybe they'll be smart enough to see that they've got a little gem here.
Yeah, let's hope.
Next up, we're going to talk about The Bear, and we're going to talk about episodes 7 and 8, and it's Legacy and Ice Chips. And in Legacy, we're at the restaurant, and of course, everything is going nuts. Everybody is running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And I feel like this is also when the Fact Brothers start to annoy me. Because,
oh god, yeah,
because they're like, oh, how do you get haunted and how do you stop a haunting?
Oh, is this the one with John Cena?
No, it's not,
isn't it? Because totally the haunting thing
episode.
Was
no, it's a totally the John Cena episode was like episode 5. We already talked about John Cena,
okay?
We already talked about that one. This is the because that episode was slightly annoying because John Cena was being John Cena. This episode was more annoying to me because it was just the Fact Brothers sitting outside chatting with each other, and I was like, I don't care what you guys are talking about, I want to be in the kitchen. And they're sitting outside discussing hauntings, and they're like, yeah, my John Cena character said he was haunting him, and they're like, well, how do we stop that and how do we make it not happen and where did it come? And they're talking about the history of it, and I don't care. That's basically my point of that, is that I do not care. But this is the episode where oh my God.
Sydney?
Huh?
Sydney?
Sydney, thank you. This is the episode where Sydney goes to breakfast with one of her old friends because they're like, oh, your restaurant is closing. What are you going to do? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to start a new restaurant and this is my plan. And I want you to come in and be the main chef with the main menu and set everything up and do your vision. And he's like, I don't want to poach you from Carmi. So I'm going to go talk to Carmi first. But I want to know if you're on board before I have that conversation. And she's kind of like, her mind is blown. She's like, what? I don't know what to do. So what do you guys think of this?
I like the episode. I'm liking the season in general. For me, the show, you know, it's moved away from just the kitchen and really kind of following different stories of the different individual people there. We had the episode with the line cook, you know, and then
that was wonderful.
Yeah, that was wonderful. And then, you know, and then we'll talk about this episode, you know, with Ice Chips, you know, with the mom and, you know, Carmi's sister. So, you know, following the storyline with Sydney and, you know, her, for me, I was wondering why they were making such a big deal about her not signing the paperwork. Narratively, like, I was like, they kept focusing on it, and now we know why, because now she hasn't signed the paperwork and she's essentially free, you know, to accept this offer. So that, you know, was interesting for me, and I thought, oh, okay, that's why they did that. And so for me, it was kind of fascinating. I liked the Ice Chips episode less. I felt like it was really supposed to be really deep and meaningful and kind of restorative, like that they would, like, you know, that I would cheer them kind of
reconciling.
Yeah, and reconcile, but it just kind of ended up being boring for me, you know what I mean?
And this is an editing thing that I'm sure is not the editor's fault, because the editors of The Bear are amazing. So I think this was the director or the producer's thought
and the script.
Yeah, it was the way they also cut it, because what they did, The Bear tends to do slow cutting to fast cutting, right? And then it creates tension and does all this stuff. What they did in this episode was the opposite. In Ice Chips, when they're in the hospital, they did these extreme close-ups of Jamie Lee Curtis, and then they didn't cut. And we just stayed with her for a really long time.
It was Jamie Lee Curtis's Emmy reel, basically.
Yeah. Basically, and I could tell that's what they were doing.
For next year's Emmy cycle.
I get it, but it's like, no, they sacrificed the story to do this weird kind of really long takes, really close-ups, and it dragged. It dragged the story, and it dragged the episode, and I was bored. And if you wrote on paper what this was about, I would have thought this would be one of the best episodes they've ever done. But watching it, it was not. It was actually one of the worst episodes I think they've done.
I totes disagree, but...
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
No, I thought it was a great episode. I liked that they didn't feel the need to cut away like so many shows do. I mean, it was a conscious choice.
It didn't work
for you. It worked for me. For what I thought, I was just talking to a friend about this, and I'm going to show an episode of my screenwriting class. I'm not sure which one yet. I would show Christmas Dinner from last year, but I don't want to put them on therapy.
The Christmas Dinner one is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Vicious.
Go ahead.
What I loved about this episode is it made Donna Bergazzi a human being, because as great as Jamie Lee Curtis is, and she's pretty freaking great, here she's not hyped up, she's not manic, she is down to earth. And the fact that the one person that Sugar has not been able to count on her entire life is the only person available to help her when she really needs it. And they are able to have a woman-to-woman, person-to-person, not mother-daughter, not friend-friend, but just woman-to-woman talk. And we find out she was abused as a child, which is why she became an abuser. And I just thought it was a really... fascinating. I thought Abby Elliott nailed it. I mean, and usually she just gets the comic reliefy stuff and gets, you know, the one liner. It's like, if you touch Marcus, I'm going to kill you. But I loved it. I loved it. And I know this whole season has been so divisive among viewers, but for my money, they chose to focus on character at the expense of plot.
I don't mind that. I love when they do that. I really do. I think the problem with this particular episode is I agree with you in theory about everything you're saying about the relationship and what they were doing in the episode. I agree that's what they were going for and they gave you all that information. My personal issue is how they did it, which was with and I agree, like, if you can go without cutting, that's what you're supposed to do. You only cut when you have to cut, but you needed to cut. There were parts of this where the shots were going on just too long. And it instead of creating drama, which is what they were trying for, they created these lulls of silence that went on just, if you go on too long, you either make people uncomfortable in certain situations where you have these lulls, you can either make them uncomfortable or you can make them bored and they check out. And I think they were going for the discomfort. That's not how it hit. Instead of making me uncomfortable when I was watching this, I was just like, dude, I started looking at my watch.
Oh, no.
And that's
I have to agree with Libya. And I think it's a function of the writing for this episode, because while I was watching it, even though I'm invested in Jamie Lee Curtis's character, even though I'm invested in the daughter, and I wanted to see all of these things that were going on, even while I was watching, I kept thinking, my God, this needs a B story. This is interesting, but it's not so interesting. I want to watch it for the entire duration, every single moment of this episode. I want to know what's going on back at the restaurant. And if we could toggle between these scenes and scenes going on back there, this would be much stronger. And I would actually paradoxically be more invested in what's going on here, because I'm not just being forced to watch this side story to the expense of what's going on back there. It needed this.
I agree on some level with you on that, like it needed another story, or it needed more happening in this particular story. There wasn't enough story for what they were doing. So instead, they just made the shots longer.
I said, and that's what I said.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough. Go ahead, Yusin.
Yeah, no, and that's what I said, you know, when I first started talking. It was the writing. For me, the episode lacked, it could have avoided the things that we're talking about and given us what I think we wanted and we expected from the episode if it actually had been written better. Like, I think it boils down to the writing. I think I think in this episode, the writing failed the writing failed the show, you know, and we talk about how well written the show is, but I think it could have just the dialogue and the story, whether it was to add a B story or whether it was, you know, to give them better dialogue that was more compelling, you know, and more interesting. I think then the episode might have worked, but for me, it didn't work. You know, and I found myself looking at my phone and also the time and kind of being like, how long is this episode? You know, kind of, because, you know, their episodes are all
odd. Have the baby already, woman.
Thank you. I actually did think that. I did think that. I was like, come on. And I feel like because I enjoyed like the first 15 minutes, I would say, I thought it was going well. So like for the first 15 minutes when the mom just showed up and they had the heart to heart and they were talking and stuff, I was like, oh, okay, this episode's working. And the episode's like 40 minutes. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know, in the beginning when they were walking into the hospital and she had that, she was like, she kept saying, breathe. She's like, I'm breathing, mom, I'm breathing. And she's like, breathe, breathe. And she's like, I'm breathing, mom, I'm breathing. And like,
oh, that was great. Yeah.
It was great. I thought it was like, you know, that, it was so iconic of their relationship, you know, and how, you know, it, you know, to me, I thought, oh, this is their relationship. You know, this is, you know, what she has to put up with and this poor woman. And, you know, it set me up for like what was going to happen, you know? And then, like I said, it didn't pay off for me in this episode.
Yeah, I would agree. All right. So let's wrap this up. Next time we come back, we get to talk about the finale. I know we're behind everybody else, but I like our slow roll into talking about all this.
Leisurely
stuff.
We have
and I will give you a hint. I really did dig the finale. So,
except you told me it ends on a cliffhanger.
Yes, that does happen. But
back with three.
So annoyed.
Okay, we'll talk about that later. So let's wrap this up. So thumbs up for the first episode. I think it's not as great.
Well,
on the second episode.
Tom really liked 8. The rest of you evidently didn't.
If you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You can listen to us on sci-fi.radio, iTunes, and YouTube. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.